From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, two lawmakers ask the state comptroller to review Governor Cuomo's Buffalo Billion economic development projects. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on Governor Cuomo's call to ensure that supposedly independent political groups aren't hijacking elections by improperly working with campaigns. And a first-of-a-kind project is launched on the Hudson River. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli has been asked by two Western New York lawmakers to review Governor Cuomo's Buffalo Billion economic development projects. The comptroller says an ongoing audit is already looking at some aspects of the increasingly controversial project and other Cuomo administration economic development initiatives that are currently under federal investigation. We get an update from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Over the weekend, Senator Rob Ort and Assemblyman Ray Walter, Republicans whose districts in part include Buffalo suburbs, wrote a letter to the Democratic state comptroller asking him to objectively and thoroughly investigate the state contracting process in regard to the Buffalo Billion, which includes the giant solar city factory and other projects. They say in the letter that the programs have little oversight and accountability, and it's easy to see how the system can be susceptible to abuse. Controller DiNapoli says he's reviewing the letter, but he says his office already has several ongoing audits of Governor Cuomo's jobs programs, and some of those reviews include portions of the Buffalo Billion projects.
We're looking at a series of economic development programs, some of which will include monies being spent in Buffalo, some of which will be part of that package of monies that's, you know, labeled Buffalo Billion.
The comptroller is in the final stages of an audit of the Cuomo administration's Excelsior Jobs Program. It offers tax credits for high-tech and related companies that promise to create jobs or invest funds into projects in New York. DiNapoli is also looking at Cuomo's Empire State Development Corporation and its compliance with reporting requirements to tell the public how many jobs have actually been created in exchange for the infusion of public funds. An audit released last year by the comptroller criticized the Empire Development Corporation for failing to more specifically account for the results of a $211 million advertising program. Those ads were to promote the so-called Startup New York program. It offers a decade of income tax and other breaks to companies that open on or near college campuses. A jobs report from Startup is now 2 months overdue, and the head of the program recently resigned. DiNapoli says he, among others, would like to see the results of that report.
Startup is a program that we'll all very anxious to see what that report has to say.
The U.S. Attorney for the Southern District, Preet Bharara, has been conducting a probe of the Buffalo Billion and other state economic development projects related to SUNY's Polytechnic Institute. DiNapoli, speaking at a lunch for Italian-American legislators, could not comment on whether he's been in contact with the U.S. Attorney over the ongoing federal probes. But he says he does not want to do anything to hamper those efforts.
When there's an active investigation, we are always careful in terms of what we choose to look at and how we choose to do that so we don't compromise the work the prosecutors are doing.
The comptroller is barred by the Cuomo administration from auditing or reviewing records of the SUNY Polytechnic Institute-related management company. That company actually negotiates the contracts for the Buffalo Billion and other SUNY Poly high-tech projects across the state. Those contracts are a focus of the federal probe. Senate GOP leader John Flanagan says he agrees with his Republican Senate member Ort's request for the state controller to probe deeper into the Buffalo Billion, but he cautions that the worth of the economic development and job creation programs should not be overlooked.
It's very important that we continue to get money out the door, that we create projects to stimulate economic development and create jobs, whether it's in Buffalo or on Long Island or in the Bronx, wherever it may be. I think we have an obligation to make sure that we still keep the wheels of government moving forward.
Governor Cuomo has also said that the ongoing investigations should not taint the value of the programs, which he calls a tremendous success. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Concerned about children's exposure to lead found in drinking water, lawmakers met with reporters this week at New York's Capitol in Albany to discuss a last-minute push to require lead testing in all public schools. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week, the discussion about lead in drinking water has made it to the desks of state lawmakers. And to that effect, our Dave Lucas will hear in just a moment, in fact, his story about how they met with reporters this week at the state capitol to discuss a last-minute push to require lead testing in all public schools, something that's not in the law.
Well, that's right, and it should be in the law. I mean, can you imagine in this country that we're going to send our children to public schools and don't test the water? We don't test the water in some of them. And therefore, kids can be drinking lead and everything else in the world that can pollute water. It doesn't make any sense. Now, we all know that there are some school groups who are very anxious not to have this law. Why not? Because the last thing in the world they want is to be forced another mandate to spend money replacing pipes and doing all those things that can cost, frankly, millions of dollars. So those people get people to go up to the legislature and lobby against it. It's a disgrace, of course, because if they're forced to, then they're going to have to find the money somehow, and they will have to find that money. But the interesting thing here is, David, that they're being called to task for it, and people are finding out about it. Look, this is a law that should be passed. When you take a look at the way in which the legislature in New York operates, it's frankly disgusting. And it has to do with money. It has to do with lobbyists. It has to do with who doesn't want to be on somebody's bad list. It has to do with somebody supporting you in an election, and now you don't want to double-cross them, a school group, for example. So it's disgraceful.
Something else that's been on the minds of certainly the U.S. attorney, but even New Yorkers, as they look at the one after the other legislator, including legislative leader Sheldon Silver and Senate leader Dean Skelos, being convicted and sent off to prison for corruption. And there's been some talk at the end of session. Will there be ethics reform? Will there not? The governor's talking about the LLC loophole. And just this week, late this week, he said he's proposing a crackdown, Alan, on the coordination of candidates for office and super PACs that are created to support their campaigns. This is the Supreme Court decision, Citizens United.
Well, first of all, David, from the Department of Hypocrisy, here's a governor who's gotten tremendous amounts of money from LLCs, huge amounts of money. As he goes into this election, before they've really done anything the next time out, which is what, 2018, he goes in with $16 million already. And so now he's saying, well, it's wrong for the LLCs to circumvent contributions and give all that they want to give. It's just wrong. So let's start with him and what he's saying. So he wants the credit, but he doesn't really want to do anything. Let me tell you something about the New York State Legislature, the governor. If the governor wants something, he gets it. If he really wants it. Why? Because he keeps the Republicans in office. He's a Democrat. He keeps the Republicans in office. And in the end, if they don't want his enmity and they want him pulling back the five guys who are Democrats who caucus with the Republicans, you know, they're going to have to do, the Senate Republicans are going to have to do what he wants. So all I got to say is he is in the Department of Hypocrisy. All right. So now you want to talk about a bunch of hypocrites and mealy-mouthed people when it comes to ethics reform. This legislature doesn't want to do anything to do damage to the golden goose. They don't want to limit the amount of money they're allowed to make like the congressmen are required to do down in Washington. They don't want to do any of that. So they come up with this great reform, not so much, which is, okay, right now, if you're a new legislator and you get elected, you cannot collect a pension if you are convicted of a crime. So now they want to make it for everybody starting right now. Well, hope springs eternal. We do know that Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos are both going to be collecting their rather large pensions for the time that they served. Of course, nobody thinks if you're a crook and convicted, you should get a pension. Nevertheless, it doesn't matter. They haven't changed that for existing legislators. Now the idea is that somehow, and it's going to take a change in the Constitution, that they get this done. So one more thing in which they can sort of think that they're fooling the public when they're not.
You referenced the power balance in the New York State Senate, and you spoke with NYPERG's Blair Horner this week, that's the New York Public Interest Research Group, about the presidential elections with two New Yorkers in, it looks like at this point, and how that might impact the power relations in New York.
That's right, because David, if Hillary Clinton beats the pants off of Donald Trump, and it looks like she is in all the polls right now, that means a lot of Democrats are going to come out to vote for Hillary. What? The first woman candidate, you know, of a major party. And they'll be there. And then they're going to look down the ballot and they're going to see a bunch of other offices of which they know zero or very little. And they can say, OK, let's see here. Where do they live? Or maybe I'll vote for them because they're a Democrat and because I'm a Democrat. And therefore, the Democrats win. If they win big enough, they take the state Senate. And then with the five so-called traitors, the Democrats who have sold out to the Republicans and have made common cause with them, then those people may actually have to go back and sit with the regular Democrats as opposed to with the Republicans for whatever they're getting, you know, committee chairmanships or the rest of it. So this election, depending on who comes out and how tough it gets, could mean an awful lot.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Concerned about children's exposure to lead found in drinking water, lawmakers met with reporters this week at New York's Capitol in Albany to discuss.
School districts in New York are not required to test drinking water for the presence of lead. An amended bill introduced in March includes a 5-point action plan that would require all school districts to test for lead at the tap. Plan when elevated lead levels are found, share findings with parents and teachers, provide state funds for testing and remediation, and require the State Department of Health to create an annual report based on those tests. State Senator Tom O'Mara, a Republican from the 58th District, is chair of the Senate Environmental Conservation Committee and lead co-sponsor of the bill.
We can't continue to allow our students in schools to drink unknown quality water.
Schenectady City School District Superintendent Lawrence Spring worries about buildings in his system that are over 100 years old.
And it's those older fixtures, those older pieces of plumbing and solder and these kinds of things that we have concerns about.
In the Greater Amsterdam School District, Superintendent Thomas Perillo says bottled water is being used after testing this spring at elementary schools.
Elevated levels of lead above the Environmental Protection Agency's acceptable level were found in water samples taken from a variety of sources located in 3 out of our 4 elementary schools, including drinking fountains and combined sink faucets and drinking fountain units.
Faucets, fittings, and pipes are to be replaced in an upcoming capital project. Jackie Cohen, senior legislative associate for the New York Public Interest Research Group, notes many of the state's school districts have already conducted voluntary tests and found elevated levels of lead.
New York parents and taxpayers have the right to know what's in their school drinking water and have the right to keep their kids safe in school. And they deserve peace of mind about the safety of their children. With only 6 days left of the legislative session, the time to get the lead out of our children's drinking water is now.
New York League of Conservation Voters, Director of Public Policy and Government Relations Christopher Gokin says that with approximately 3,000 school buildings across the state, the estimated cost of testing is pegged somewhere between $5,000 and $8,000 per building.
You're looking at a cost probably between $15 and $25 million if we were to do every single school building in the state.
Supporters are confident they'll have a funding stream in place and vow that passage of the bill will not result in an unfunded mandate.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo announced this week $5.5 million in projects to construct visitor centers at each entrance of the longest elevated pedestrian bridge in the world, the walkway over the Hudson. Cuomo made the announcement mid-bridge before a number of local elected officials and others. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn was there and filed this report.
Walkway over the Hudson spans the river between the town of Lloyd in Ulster County and the city of Poughkeepsie in Dutchess County. Cuomo says the energy-efficient gateway centers that will be built at both entrances will help increase tourism not only for the walkway, but for the entire region.
Two welcome centers will enhance this attraction. I believe we'll get more people coming here because of the welcome centers. I believe it will increase the regional tourism. Because if you're getting people here, right, you're getting people in the store if you're thinking commercially. You come in for one product, we're going to sell you another product. You come in to see the walkway, well, we have Minnewaska State Park. We have FDR's home. We have Dutchess County Parks. Once we get you here, well, then you have to come back because there's more to see. And we want to use this opportunity, this touching, to introduce you to the entire region.
Cuomo calls walkway food for the soul. Rose Harvey is commissioner of the New York State Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation.
The west side is fully designed. It's ready to go once we get that sewer line connected, and we'll start construction in 2017. It's got outdoor, indoor seating, more room for concessions, a new amphitheater for events, landscaping, upgrading the paths. This isn't all that sexy, but even the bus turnarounds for all the people that want to get there. And guess what? No more trailers at the entrance of the West End.
And she describes plans for the East Side.
More concession room, covered seatings, gathering place, information booth, relocated signage, and guess what? No more porta potties. A comfort station. Well, not always. We might have some porta potties.
Of the $5.5 million dedicated for the centers, $3 million is for the East End Visitor Center and $2.5 million for the Sustainable West End Visitor Center, which will be powered by a solar panel array. The state will commit $1 million toward the project, while the remaining $1.5 million will be raised by the not-for-profit Walkway Over the Hudson Friends Group. Both facilities will use energy-efficient measures, including LED lighting. Former Walkway Chairman Fred Schaefer is a Poughkeepsie attorney who galvanized the grassroots effort that led to Walkway's creation.
Park is beautiful, but we always know we can make things better. And I always said I didn't want it to be just the longest park in the world, or the most beautiful, but also the friendliest park. So with the visitor center, we can make people enjoy it a lot more, and hopefully they'll come here with a lasting memory, and they will think it's not just the most beautiful, but the greatest park in the world.
Ulster County Executive Mike Hine and Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro were on hand for the announcement. Here's Molinaro.
The walkway has been a tremendous addition to the regional tourism economy, and what the governor's announced today is a real expansion of the walkway's footprint, its impact, and its ability to attract countless visitors, and with that, tremendous visitor spending and economic improvement.
Meanwhile, walkway officials are gearing up for the June 12th marathon race series. As for whether the Republican Molinaro is participating.
I am. I'm actually, the governor kept me from preparing. I have a 9-mile run I was supposed to be on this morning. I was going to ask him to run with me, but I thought that might be a little bit odd.
The Gateway Visitor Center projects are part of Governor Cuomo's New York Parks 2020 initiative, a multi-year commitment to improving and expanding access to outdoor recreation by leveraging $900 million in private and public funding through 2020.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Officials and environmental advocates celebrated the removal of a dam in Troy last week that will provide habitat to migrating fish. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports the project is the first of its kind on the Hudson River.
You have so many kinds of fish coming up in here. You have shad, striped bass, Atlantic sturgeon, herring are all coming in from the ocean. They can't reproduce in salt water. They have to have freshwater tidal conditions like here on the Hudson.
Fran Dunwell, Hudson River Estuary Coordinator for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, says many people who live and commute along the Hudson don't realize the river itself serves as a sort of highway for migrating fish. Today, the Wynantskill empties into the Hudson River through a concrete culvert at a site that was once home to a mill. But it wasn't until a 6-foot dam was removed from the spillway that native river herring could travel up the stream to spawn. Dunwell says the removal is the first of its kind to help the herring.
It doesn't look like great habitat, but from a fish standpoint, fish looks at this and they say, I can get through there and I can get to an area where I can spawn. And you can see there are cobbles, there's brick on the ground there, there are twigs and trees.
The work to remove the dam was completed in cooperation with environmental group Riverkeeper and the City of Troy. The process to remove the dam was kick-started 3 years ago by Riverkeeper patrol boat captain John Lipscomb, who spotted something unusual beside the dam.
And so when I came up in 13, there must have been some valve in that had broken after ages. And I saw a giant discharge of water over under that old mill.
So Lipscomb took a closer look on land with two DEC officers and realized that what he had originally thought was an immovable dam was actually a hinged structure, and possibly easily removable. And as it happens, DEC has a budget for barrier removal. Riverkeeper, DEC, and Troy then coordinated to lift the steel dam out of the river, restoring the tributary's flow. Lipscomb explained that every single tributary to the 155-mile Hudson River estuary has a barrier, either man-made or natural. DEC has identified more than 1,500 dams that affect tributaries. While barrier removal to restore habitat is growing increasingly popular in other states, including neighboring Massachusetts, New York is lagging behind. The removal of the Troy Dam is the first barrier removed in the river from Troy to the Atlantic.
The first. And it's also, you know, to Troy's credit that all these city officials, they have plenty to do running their city. They have plenty to do. But somehow these men and women found it important enough to give something back to the river.
Mayor Patrick Madden said anything for the health of the river is good for the people of Troy. He says the Hudson is part of the city's psyche.
We've got so much waterfront here in Troy. We relate so much to the river. It touches so much of our history, not just the river, but the tributaries as well. And in fact, you know, part of this impediment, or this impediment rather, is part of our history. It's no longer necessary, so it's good to get it out of there and let nature take its course again.
For photos of the restored Wynantskill and the dam removed from the stream, visit WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1624, or just listen on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.